This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3288 for Wednesday the 10th of March 2021. Today's show is entitled, Linux In-Laws S01E25, The Grumpy Old Coders, and is part of the series, Linux In-Laws. It is hosted by Monochrome, and is about 60 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, our heroes host an episode with an eclectic duo, not Waldorf or Statler.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is Linux In-Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open-plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35, or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs.
Dear listeners, good evening, wherever you're listening to, from, whatever, doesn't matter. Tonight is a very special episode, because we have Martin, guests on the show, right? Martin, would you do the honor? Yes. And introduce the Grumpy Old Coders, for those few listeners who do not know who they are.
Yes.
Before they introduce themselves.
Well, why don't we get them to introduce ourselves? They can say it much better than we can.
Excellent. Let's do this.
David.
You told me I don't need to prepare anything. Yeah.
This is sort of preparation, David.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, my name is David, and I'm together with Thomas. Right, Thomas will introduce himself in a second, but we are the Grumpy Old Coders, meaning we have a podcast with this name. If you don't know it yet, maybe listen to it after
the episode. The link
maybe
will
not
be in the show. Maybe.
I don't know. You should stop this podcast now and listen to
stop this podcast.
You're not stealing listeners. You're not. We've got to cut this out. Just disregard this remark.
Anyway, right? So over to talk. Yeah, maybe a bit about me, right? So I would call myself a database expert. Worked for a bunch of open source companies in the past. I'm doing NoSQL consultancy, if you want to, right? And I'm working quite a lot with a company called Redis Labs, the same company Christoph is working with.
Right. Full disclosure, yes, I'm working for Redis Labs.
Okay.
As Thomas. Martin used to, by the way.
Yeah, as Martin used to. Exactly. So, Thomas, over to you.
Okay, should I go then?
Absolutely.
Well, I'm a tech guy, I suppose. I've been writing software since 2004, which is, I don't know, 57 years now. And I've worked for several companies, including small companies, big companies. I've worked for Symantec, but also for sort of five people consulting businesses. And since about a half year, I'm a cloud guy now. So I work for Amazon Web Services. in their public sector service thing, service arm. So professional services / solution architecture / proof of concept writing, that sort of thing. Yeah, that's me.
So you cover the public sector working for a public cloud provider. Okay.
Yes. So the way it works, it is a public cloud provider. Yes, of course. It's the public cloud. Well, Amazon also has private clouds. So there is the US government cloud, the China cloud. I think, I don't remember if there's a Germany cloud for Amazon. I think there is, but I'm not sure. I should actually know this, but I don't. And what we do is we write proof of concept software for the public sector. Public sector, obviously, meaning governments, health. So one of our customers, the NHS, things like that. We write proof of concepts on what they can do with the cloud. We do this for free, and we hand that software over to them, and then it's up to them if they want to use it. So it is it is showing the power of the cloud, basically. The business model is, of course, then that they use the software, and you know, we get paid via consumption. Compute and storage consumption. That's the idea. So yeah, that's me.
If the NSS finally run into that brick wall due to some software thing, it's just still the NSH, the NHS fault, because you just wrote the thing but handed it over to the NHS.
I suppose so. I mean, yeah, we do say it's proof of concept code. So we do say, okay.
Very important, yes.
Yeah, it's very important. If you want to productionize this, then, you know, you need to go to some whatever's needed to productionize it. You know, there might be ISO certifications of the processes. You know, there might be additional hardening steps like improving the test coverage and all that sort of thing. We just say it's a proof of concept to show you what's possible. That's sort of our stance.
Yeah. Full disclosure, of course, the NHS will never run into a brick wall because it's government backed, as we all know, right? So no fear, Great Britain, no fear.
I suppose
Brexit
so.
Brexit or not.
I didn't realize you had an NHS in Germany as well.
No, we don't.
Yeah, Mark, that is surprising.
I'm referring to the UK entity as a matter of fact.
Ah, I didn't realize Thomas works in the UK as well. There's lots of things.
I live in the UK. Yeah, I should have said that in the introduction, shouldn't I? So I am German, as you can clearly hear by my dodgy accent, and I live in the UK since 2009.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So what's it? What's that now? 12 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And I'm struggling. My German is declining.
I still remember when you left Germany, actually. Right? Interesting.
Yeah. It was quite a new chapter, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I reckon I'm the only one living in Germany because David lives in Bavaria, which is of course not part of Germany.
when has that happened? Have I been away so long?
Depends who's asked, right? I would say it's part of Germany, but.
maybe not. I don't know.
I would say it's part of Germany, but yeah, there are some Bavarians. If you ask them, they are saying it's not part of Germany. Yeah.
There's Germany. Yeah.
Full disclosure: Bavaria relates to Germany like Texas to the rest of the Federation. Let's put it this way. Martin, you are living in the UK as well, right?
I am.
You are indeed. Although you're not from there.
Depends how far back you go, yes, indeed.
About the usual 60 years as in your age, Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But then I'm not back from German origin like the rest of us.
You see, some people would dispute that, actually. It depends. For this closer, Martin is Dutch by origin.
Right, which is not Germany, last time I looked.
Well, yes, but you see, that depends on the historical context about what? A couple of thousand years ago, it was all one tribe, right?
Yeah, well, if you approach it from that way, there are no English people either. It's either
correct.
French
yes.
people or Anglo-Saxon people or Viking people, you know.
Indeed, yes, very much so.
Yeah.
Welcome to the history podcast.
Okay. I watched The Dig on Netflix the other day. Great film, if you're into that sort of thing.
What was the film
title? The Dig. It's about the Sutton Hoo treasure in Britain, where they found some amazing artifacts from the Anglo-Saxon period and the whole story.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it's really good. I would recommend
sounds
it.
Sounds good. Yes.
The Dig on Netflix.
Okay guys. But I think enough about history. The reason why we have
and Grumpy Netter, Old Corp. And Netflix advertising,
yes,
sorry.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, other streaming services are available.
Doesn't Amazon run their own thing or something? I don't remember.
Yeah, it's always a soundtrack now that we're advertising next.
Okay. The reason why we brought the Grumpy Old Coders over is, of course, their podcast. So the idea is to, because we didn't prepare a script as we normally don't, to actually shed some light on how the Grumpy Old Coders arrived at podcasting, and to some extent also how we arrived at podcasting. Of course, avid listeners of the Linux In-Laws probably know some details about this, because there are a few episodes where we dropped hints. But David, Thomas, why don't you kind of give us a head start how the Grumpy Old Coder started and what finally basically convinced you to do your own thing in terms of a podcast?
Should I start, Thomas?
Yeah, go for it.
Actually, I'm doing I started to do a podcast internally for Redis Labs, right? So for the technical field at Redis Labs, as you know, Christoph, right?
Redis Stars, yes, absolutely recommend it.
No, Redis Stars is the
internal one.
So,
okay, sorry, yes,
exactly.
Of course.
So the internal one, basically for consultants, solutions architects, and whoever wants to listen to it, right? Technical account managers and so on. And, I had to buy this equipment anyway.
This is one of the primary reasons for joining Redis Labs. Redis Labs is hiring, and being at Redis Labs, you get to listen to this podcast, but enough plugs now.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, Redis Labs is even hiring technical enablement architects. So.
If it is heading that department, I might add.
So we had to do this for educational reasons for Redis Labs in order to promote and underline the educational programs which we have in addition, like trainings and so on, right? So I thought it's a good idea to kind of provide people that are often traveling right on the road a kind of additional format where they can listen to knowledge and have a kind of alternative format. Thomas and me, we had for a while the idea to do something together. And when we met, I'm not sure how often we meet actually, Thomas, right? How often we met, maybe once a quarter or something like this, right?
Just
for a beer or something like that, right? And we had ideas to do something together. And then the idea was raised, hey, why not doing a podcast, right? Because nowadays everyone has a podcast.
Even we do, yes.
The idea was born, and then we kind of thought about how we name it and stuff like this, right?
Yeah. Okay. So how did you arrive at the name?
That was entirely David's idea.
Yeah.
David.
Actually, if you know the Muppet Show, right? It's the Muppet Show, I believe. There are those two grumpy old guys, right?
Sitting on the...
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Waldorf and Stettler. Yeah, people sometimes compare Thomas and myself with those two grumpy guys.
Full disclosure, David and Thomas borrowed the idea from some people called Linux In-Laws, because we had the podcast first, and if you take a close look at the image on our landing page, these are just hats put on Waldorf and Stadler.
Okay.
Yes.
We're not aware of. So it
was ignorance is not.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You're not fooling anybody there.
Anyway, right? So basically, based on the idea we had, right?
can I just say? So we first had the idea of a podcast in 2015. And
I
then
see.
We sort of we just left it. We were all too busy, right? And then
that's true. Actually,
I think last year I think we finally started, but we had the idea years and years ago. Okay. Yeah, we know each other for more than 20 years.
Wow!
And as you said,
old couple indeed.
Yeah, and in a way, and we don't see much of each other because he's in the States, or
is he?
I don't know, South Africa, yeah. Israel lately. You know, wherever he is, and I'm in the UK. And that's just not much opportunity. And yeah, this is, it's really enjoyable, actually. Yeah. It's
good. We meet each other sometimes when I'm in the UK, right? I mean, now due to Corona, we can't travel anymore, right?
Yeah.
So it was more, I would travel more in the past, right? This was kind of fixed because I have small kids now. But yeah, in the past, I was quite a lot traveling and or didn't have always the opportunity to go to London, right? Sometimes at least.
Yeah,
and it gives us, or to be honest, the motivation is more or less, or for Thomas and me to just have fun together, right? To spend time together and, nothing more than that, right? So we just do our thing and, whoever wants to listen in and, finds it useful can do this, right? And, who's not interested, who is not interested, right? That's it.
Yeah, that's right. We basically do it for us. And if people are listening, that's a bonus.
David, that rings. Sorry, Martin, that rings a bell, right?
Yeah, I was just going to ask how many beers did this decision take on your part?
Full disclosure, Martin and myself stopped counting after 10.
No, we actually didn't need any beer for that. Maybe one, right? Maybe one or the standard one we are having if we are having.
Yeah, this is the official version, right?
I'm a lightweight. 10 beers would absolutely destroy me. I couldn't take 10 beers. Yeah.
I think the maximum I could take so far was 12. 12.
Jesus.
Do you mean liters? 6 liter or a liter?
I usually tap out after the fourth. So that's sort of my level.
But this was at Oktoberfest. This was at Oktoberfest, by the way.
David, you live in Bavaria, right?
Yeah.
So, but I'm not originally Bavarian, so I was not fed with beer when I was younger, right?
Apparently that shows too then, okay.
Yeah. Oktoberfest. Shall I tell my Oktoberfest story?
Please.
Yeah, time. Why not? Moving why on. Not? Why not? Right. So I was part of a startup back in the day, which of course has failed, which is why, you know, I'm in employment again now. And some of my co-founders sort of they organized this meetup, right? So let's meet these important people, go to the Oktoberfest, have some fun, right? So one of those people that we met was the I forgot his name, the CEO of the Goodfellows, the coffee chain in Germany, right? Okay. Gustav, you know Goodfellows? Is it Goodfellows? Something like that.
Coffee Fellows.
Coffee Fellows. So people like that. And it was like, you know, just go there, have a little chat. And I thought, okay, you know, let's stay sober, right? Let's have one or two beers. And that's it. So I hadn't eaten much in the day. You can probably tell where the story is going, right? So I hadn't eaten much, and I thought, yeah, one beer, two. I had two beers, and I was basically dead, right? The guy had to almost carry me home, and yeah. So that's my memory of the Oktoberfest.
Sort of totally boring, chances. Man. Totally boring.
That's me. Two beer. To be fair, a beer is a liter, right, at the Oktoberfest.
Yeah, but that's nothing.
It's a mass, yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah. It's, by the way, not unusual, right? So it's not too unusual to meet at Oktoberfest for business reasons and just meet customers or prospects or partners, right? I had this a few times already in the past and I never got the concept, I have to admit, right? Because it's very noisy. It's hard to talk to each other. It's indeed, it is a kind of experience together. And maybe this helps you to do better business later then, right? Because you have pictures of each other. I don't know.
You have like, leverage.
But actually for meaningful conversations, it's useless, right? Because it's really noisy and whatever, right?
Yeah, and then comes the part where you stand on the benches and you dance on the benches and it all gets very bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An exception for me is actually the Herbstfest or in Erding. So which is like, the listeners outside of Germany maybe don't know, right? But Oktoberfest, even if it's the biggest of its kind, right? Is not the best one, right? They're around the same time. Yeah. There are a lot of little, events that are kind of similar in basically every single town in Bavaria, right? And the smaller ones are actually better, right? The Oktoberfest is more for tourists.
but do they have a Humtata, a brass band that plays Highway to Hell? Only if they have that, I'm coming.
Maybe, who knows, right? But they also have tents and bands, the smaller ones, right? And beer, a bit cheaper than the big Oktoberfest. And it, especially important, they are not that crowded, right? Which means it's a bit a better experience. I actually like the smaller ones, right? I'm not such an Oktoberfest guy, but the smaller ones like the Erdinger Herbstfest is actually, this is quite nice, right? So if I would leave Bavaria tomorrow, yeah, I would miss this, let's see, right?
Yeah, I hear you.
Anyway, yeah, welcome to the podcast on German.
Yes, very good.
German culture, yeah. Wasn't this why you invited us, right? We just found out that most of us are anyway German, right?
Okay, come on, go ahead.
On a more serious note. In the whole podcasting scenario, what kind of technology do you guys use?
So I have to admit I'm using not open source software for this. I'm using Logic Pro X by Apple, right, for recording my stuff, and I'm also using this for the post production. Okay. So meaning, we do it differently than you guys. So we basically have a kind of Discord meeting, and at the same time we record via another microphone, a better microphone, via a kind of audio recorder, which is in my case Logic Pro X, right, which is a digital audio workstation, and I think Thomas is using Audacity, which is open source. Audacity had lately some issues on Mac, which is the reason why I changed it, but the main reason why I'm using Logic Pro X is because it's having a lot of built-in functionality which helps you with the post-processing, right, like noise reduction, noise filtering, compression, has some presets. So especially if you don't know too well what you're doing during the post-production steps, and you're not 100% expert, as I am not one, right? Then Logic Pro X is actually really helpful by helping you to get a good result out of your audio tracks. And besides of that, we are recording via microphone, so condenser microphones. I'm using an Audio Technica studio microphone for recording. I think Thomas uses something else.
I didn't want to spend £200, so I have a sort of semi entry level microphone. I think it's called Q9 or something, and I paid £50 for it. And as David said, yeah, we record locally. So each one of us records its own track locally, and then we synchronize it with some synchronizing noises that we do. I recorded Audacity and then just sent the MP3 to David, and he does his magic.
Okay. This is how we did it initially, but then we discovered Big Blue Button, and now Jibri. The jury is still out on this one, but this is how we started, right, Martin?
Definitely. So far, so good, right? Apart from the setting up part, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah, full disclosure, audio Linux can be a bitch. But this is not something new. Anyway, Leonard, if you're listening, get in touch, please.
Isn't there a managed Jitsi service on AWS? I have to Google that now.
I do not know. Well, I mean, if I listen to the grumpy old coders, which I do on a regular basis, full disclosure, you tackle everything, right? From Microsoft technologies right up to programming languages, you had this massive 2-3-4 hour long
20 hours.
Well, it felt like 7.
You had a 7-hour long 2020 review. I don't know. So you clearly don't have open source or the focus, and of course that's fully understood, appreciated, whatever. Where do you see? I mean, first of all, how did you come up with the subject area, and where do you see the Grumpy Old Coders going forward?
Wow, very good question, right?
And how do you pick your topics?
Yeah, we just do a brainstorming. So Thomas, me, and sometimes we have guests that are influencing it. So our, let's say maybe a friend of ours has a topic he wants to talk about, right? And then if he's coming to us, we say, okay, fine, bring your topic. You're the expert. We are the moderators. And then we do minimal research before we have the conversation with him and have a nice little conversation for an hour. This is one format. So basically some expert guest speakers. We did this with Michael, right? And there's a new episode to come. Actually, it should have already been released, but I'm too late because I'm too busy. But anyway, and besides of that, Thomas and me, we're just sitting together and we think about some topics we find interesting, right? And whatever we find interesting, we then talk about it during the podcast. So there's no specific scheme. There's just a list of topics we have, and this list is from time to time extended, right?
Yeah, it's a good thing about our profession is that we are constantly learning, right? We're constantly doing new things. So one of the things we said in a previous episode is I think that we want to get more acquainted with the whole concept of machine learning, because both of us had this at university back in the 90s and early 2000s, but the computing power just wasn't there yet. And now that we have the cloud and we have a much better tool chain, the whole thing becomes interesting again. As you can see, and I mean, if you have a smart speaker at home, if you have an Alexa or whatever,
the Google cloud doesn't have to do with it personally. I think GPUs are more important. But
GPUs can be used for machine learning. Indeed, which was your point. Yeah, sorry, yeah. But you can have GPUs in the cloud. Aha.
Yes, you can.
There you go. Checkmate. So anyway, yeah, so this is the thing where we're probably going to do an episode. I see us doing an episode of this year. The algorithms and the tools and TensorFlow and what have you, deep learning, yeah, all that stuff.
How the algorithms develop over time.
So yeah, so we're constantly learning this profession, and this is what makes it interesting.
Yeah, another topic on our list is, I believe, Kotlin, right? So I would like to talk a bit about Kotlin because I like the programming language, and maybe one idea would be to have a kind of walkthrough, right? Just verbally through some of the concepts and just discuss them from the point of view and based on the experience of, for instance, Thomas, right?
Yeah.
With other languages like .NET and so on. So something like this.
And what surprised me during the first few episodes that this was kind of really Microsoft heavy. You both seem to come, at least Thomas seems to come from a Microsoft development background.
Yes. So yes, I have done. Yes.
I'm just asking. Sorry.
No. It's true. So Microsoft has sort of paid my wages in a way for many years. So I've done C# for 12 years. And, you know, then I sort of moved into web development, which was web forms. If anyone knows who that is, if you don't know what that is, you're good. You're lucky, right? Because it's horrendous. Okay. And then, I moved to Angular, which is obviously not a Microsoft technology. And that's where kind of my exodus began, right? Okay. Once you are in the whole Angular universe, you get to know TypeScript, and now TypeScript is my favorite language, so I want to use TypeScript on the back end. So that's why I learned Node. Okay. And right, and now I'm sort of full stack on the whole JavaScript chisel, and I'm not sort of connected to Microsoft anymore, but I've still done 12 years of C#. So that's sort of where that is all coming from. Obviously, as a C# guy, Azure is the cloud you use, right? But you know, now I work for Amazon. And I like Linux. I have Linux. I'm running Linux right now for many years. So,
Microsoft is not the anti-angel of open source anymore. I mean, Gido joined Microsoft officially. So that's a done deal. And I mean, fair enough. I mean, Microsoft came up with something called F#, if I'm not completely mistaken.
Yes.
Of course, that's another functional ripoff, like Rust is, I might add. So it would be interesting. I mean, there was an interesting remark in this whole 2020 review episode regarding Rust, and given the fact that, especially at Microsoft, Rust has taken a really significant upturn. And the latest is actually that, I don't know if you heard this, there is a Python dependence in a package called Cryptography that is replacing C with Rust. Needless to say, that caused a little bit of a stir in the community, because now you have to, in addition to a C compiler, you have to have something called a Rust compiler running on your platform if you want to compile what is known as a wheel in Python, especially in packaging format. The thing is that PyPy, which is the official package, which is the official package archive for Python, does support binary wheels, but not for all triplets, as in for all architectures on all operating systems. The trouble now, of course, is I run, for example, at home, an ARMv5 TE with little endian, which is officially not supported by Rust C.
That would be a problem. Yeah.
Indeed. So what I'm looking at, either I basically /submit a PR for the installation script, or I simply forget about cryptography, which is a major dependency in quite a few packages in Python.
Yeah.
In how many? I mean, is it really having that high impact? I guess historically seen the stuff which is C compiled is or C++ compiled is much, much bigger, right?
Apparently, there are a few Docker images for modules in Redis that have this dependency because they run on Alpine, and Alpine has that as a base package included. So if
The modules are not based on Rust, right? Are they?
No. The Docker images use Alpine Linux as the user land. And this Alpine Linux has cryptography apparently as a dependency for whatever reason, I don't know. So I already see the first image. I see the first few pull requests coming in to do something about this. But the thing is that now you have an additional dependency in your open source world, which is not supported by each and every architecture.
Yeah, not sure if this happened already a few times in the past. I guess I'm right. So that something like this needed to be addressed over time, let's say, right?
No, it's just interesting because this is something I would call evolution, because the better or the more improved version of a software basically survives or makes the next step. Yeah. Now, I mean, if I understand this correctly, and this full disclosure, this happened about 2 days ago, so it's brand new. We're recording this on the, Martin, what is it? The 10th of February. So we're looking at the 8th or something. But given the fact that Rust is becoming a more important language over and over, Microsoft is taking big investments on this, or is making big investments on this. There's also a Linux kernel crate for Rust, allowing primarily device drivers to be implemented in Rust. Redis Labs, full disclosure, has invested at least in one module being re-implemented in Rust, namely Redis JSON. Where do the grumpy old coders see this going in the light of functional alternatives like F-sharp and so forth?
I'm not sure if I have a strong opinion about this, to be very honest, right? The thing is, I mean, let's say Rust is very popular, right, among other languages that are quite popular, like Golang and so on, right? And some languages are there to survive, some die, and it's just a trend, let's say, right? And if you compare how many... meaning from my point of view, the language made it at the end, right? If it arrived in enterprises, in a sense, but so
maybe like Java?
Java made it in a sense. I mean, maybe Java is now, I would not joke too much about it because at the end,
I'm not joking. I'm serious.
Because at the end, if you look at the statistics and there are different surveys, right? And I would say Java is one of the more successful languages. Indeed, there is stuff which is kind of blocking it a bit from being more successful, and maybe it's a bit dusted nowadays, right? And that said, there are other languages or attempts to have new languages on the Java virtual machine, right? Like, for instance, Kotlin, which is like a more modern version of Java, let's say, right? By stealing a lot of concepts from different places.
Okay.
Or boring is maybe a a better term in this context. And as you said, evolution, right? Evolution also means that it kind of gets inspired by other stuff and picks it up if it is or seen as being successful, right? By adapting in this sense, because the winner is the one who is able to adapt, let's say, right? And there's a lot of stuff happening, right? Thomas mentioned JavaScript, for instance, on the server side, on the client side, and obviously JavaScript was the winner on the client, on the client side. But Node, for instance, being very, very popular, right? I, me personally, but this doesn't mean anything, right? But I guess the statistics are kind of aligned with this observation. Yeah. I didn't see Node being used a lot in really real enterprise grade software, yeah. Right? So I mean it's trendy, fine, right? It had people that are coming from the JavaScript client side or to basically become quickly full stack developers, and it got a lot of traction and popularity, and there is a good community, and it's an I believe JavaScript, TypeScript, or nice TypeScript, especially in nice languages and so on, right? But if this is going to survive, will also depend on how practically it can be used over the time. And I guess Rust has better chances there, but if it really will survive, I don't know, right? It's hard to say at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, technological Darwinism. With the thing about Microsoft switching things out, I think the main switch that has happened from Microsoft is sort of the old way of looking at it. You know, we want to sell licenses, you know, we want to sell software. And I feel that they are completely going away from this, or they have completely gone away from this a few years ago when the new CEO took over, that they follow sort of a similar business model like Amazon Web Services does, where in a way, all they care about is selling cloud compute and selling cloud storage, right? Because that scales, and also the profit margins are something like 25%, right? So they make way more money, I can imagine, with the Azure cloud than they do with selling licenses. Or maybe if they aren't now, they will be. So I'm amazed that they haven't open sourced Windows yet. I can imagine the only reason why they haven't done it yet is because there are some sort of third party license that they can disclose or some stuff like that. Right. So this is why. So they don't care anymore about this login, this technology login. Right. And if changing out compilers for the compiler that they see, the open source compiler where they see the future, then they just do it. You know, if it helps them sell more compute and more storage, then that's what they do.
Interesting perspective, yes. But then apparently Microsoft, in contrast to what was 15, 20 years ago, is giving a lot of things back, because
yeah.
The number of contributions, for example, to the Linux kernel in 2013, 2012 maybe, has risen significantly, because of course, naysayers may say that this was all to prepare Azure for running Linux workloads, but at the end of the day, just the fact alone that they had actually somebody called Guido von Rossum, who is the inventor of Python, by the way, I think tells a lot, because that means, and I think at least two core contributors to something called CPython, which is the standard Python interpreter on GitHub, by the way, are coming from Microsoft. So Microsoft is funding a significant chunk of Python development. I mean, the company has clearly changed since Ballmer left.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, things like the Windows subsystem for Linux, that would have been unimaginable under Ballmer.
Yes.
Right. So for the guy, you may not be familiar with this, but this is sort of a built-in Linux in Windows that you can fall back on to do whatever you need to do, your development, it's very good for developing Node. That's how I've used it in the past. You know, that sort of gives you an indication where it's going.
I mean, yeah, it used to be just Ubuntu, but now you can choose and pick a user land of choice, run WSL.
Yeah, any distribution that's compatible.
So that's a very interesting thought, because essentially you use Windows.
Before, right? It's not particularly practical to be doing that. You may as well just run a Linux machine instead.
Yes, but you can still use Windows as a glorified bootloader.
I mean, for some, you know, in some companies, I've worked for McLaren, right? And you get a corporate laptop which has Windows on, and that's end of the story. And for that, I was very happy to use the Windows subsystem for Linux because of the tight integration to the IDEs I had running. Of course, I could have run a virtual machine on it, you know, but Windows subsystem for Linux actually better.
There's a good argument against virtual machines for some use cases, right? So what I did, for instance, I used it a few times on other machines I had to maintain within my family because, let's say, the majority of the let's say, non-geeky persons out there are using Windows, right?
Yeah.
And I'm actually not a PowerShell guy if it comes to doing something like finding files or writing scripts which serves a specific problem for them, right? So what I did then is I just used the Linux subsystem to do this, or in the past, Cygwin, right? So basically the first thing I did is I installed Cygwin in order to be able to use bash scripts, right? So there are good reasons to use this subsystem, I would say, right?
Yeah.
Like scripting stuff in a more kind of unified way, right?
And speaking of family, what I found is a lot of them don't care. So I told my wife, is it okay if I put Linux on the living room laptop, right? For instance, and she said, as long as I can log in and start the browser, I don't care. You know, and I'm finding the same attitude with my older son, because he lives in Google Docs and Google Meets and all that stuff. So he says, as long as I have Chrome, I'm good.
Well, yeah. That's the reason for the Chromebook numbers, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
It's one of the most popular laptops being sold, laptop families rather, sorry. Because you just switch it on and the rest happens in the cloud.
The only thing for the family that's holding back is gaming, right? So gaming on Linux in the last years has come on in leaps and bounds.
Steam,
just the other day I tried this whole Steam on Linux stuff, and it works amazingly well.
Yeah. Not every game, which is a little bit deep, but let's say a lot of games are working quite well, especially the ones that are based on OpenGL, right? If it comes to DirectX, there are possibilities, right? Like, how is it called, right?
Is it Proton, something like that? Vulkan?
I think it was named, and where you can rename basically, or I'm not sure anymore how it is called, but where you can basically translate DirectX calls into OpenGL calls.
Yeah, I think it's called Vulkan. Let me Google that.
But I have one point about, just exchanging the desktop or with a Linux desktop works fine for my wife as well, right? Everyone who is maybe around our age and younger is getting quickly used to it, right? But my experience is it doesn't work with older persons, right? So older persons like our parents. So because they are using the computer a little bit strange, but they're using it by doing simple pattern matching. They are not actually knowing what they are doing, let's say.
Well, I'm almost tempted to say I'm an older person. I've been using Linux for the last 30 plus years.
Yeah, sorry, okay, fine. But you're a tech guy. You don't count.
True, right? Okay.
If I give my mother-in-law one of my mothers-in-law is a teacher, right? And she's she will nearly get out of school, let's say, right, to get pension. She uses Windows at work and she uses Windows at home. And if the button is just, let's say, a little bit different, or there is a slightly different dialogue, right? Then she's calling me and is asking, what is this, right? Is this dangerous or whatever, right? And I have the same situation with my other mother-in-law, right? A bit patchworky, right? But anyway, and she's doing exactly the same. So meaning it seems that the older persons that are not having any tech background, so let's say maybe 60 plus, right? They sometimes struggle to exactly understand what they are doing with the computer. They just have specific tasks and they know how to do it and they follow exactly the same procedure. And if you would give them another UI, this would completely freak them out, right? Let's say.
Yeah, that's the thing. But that's solvable, you know, if you give them a Linux and then sit down for 2 hours and say, you know, click on this for email, click on that for the internet.
Yeah, sure. You can invest some additional time.
Yeah. That's what I did for my neighbor who used Windows, I don't know, Windows XP, and he wanted a new laptop. And of course, Windows XP, nope. So I had to train him on Windows 8. You know, so that was fun. You know, what's all this rectangular stuff? Yeah. But yeah, we got it in the end. If you sit down for the hour and train him, then you're good.
Hopefully. Or he just doesn't tell you, right?
Which is also something which
happens, right? So, and just wraps it up again, does it into the shelf.
Most PCs are still sold with Linux these days, unless it's obviously Mac, but yeah, still the most popular shipped operating system, I'm sure. So it will be a while before that changes.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want to buy a laptop with Linux on it, your options are very limited. I think Dell does it. And then some other obscure vendors that you haven't heard of. Mm. And that's
There's quite a few boutique shops that sell Linux laptops, like the System76.
Yes, thought of them.
There's even a German Tuxedo. Yes, Tuxedo, of course, in Germany. So yes, you can get them. And of course, Dell does too.
Mm. But you wonder how good are they? Is there support on it? So, you know, there is that.
True.
As long as you're not trying to use the audio, you'll be fine. Yeah.
Leonard, who needs audio, on, right?
Leonard, if you're listening, all is forgiven. Just come on the show. Okay, guys. Before we wrap this up, any parting thoughts? You haven't still spilled the beans on where do you see the Grumpy Old Coders going, apart from giving us back the board items, that is, of course.
I mean, what do we mean by that? I mean, it's not the case that we have do you guys have a big vision for your
podcast? Yes, we do. It's actually on our website. We call it World Domination.
Yeah. Open source and communism. Good luck with that.
We don't want credits in our space.
Yes, in this case, our goal is also World Domination. We will come at odds at some point.
We have
got it. Yeah, that's so bad.
Our goal is to avoid Linux and Laws World.
Right. That was nice our last one. Corporation then.
Exactly. Excellent. We are the opposition.
Making progress. which is a contradiction, of course, in terms, because both Thomas as well as David come from the, what is now known as the, GDR.
It was always known as that.
Sorry. Yes, of course, you're right. And for our younger listeners, that would be the eastern part of Germany, which became part of the western part at something called the reunification about, 30 years ago or something.
Exactly, yeah. A while ago, let's say, right?
A while ago, yes.
That's the old part of Grumpy Old Coders.
Yes, and of course, one final question, actually. Why is Saxonian out of the question? As a dialect.
I mean, you know why, Crystal.
No, I don't.
You damn well know why.
I don't know.
Full disclosures, they come from the East, but they apparently try to avoid it, these grumpy old coders.
Let's say it this way, right? I mean, I'm from Thuringia, and I'm more from, south, or the southern area of Thuringia, and the southern area of Thuringia is more, regarding the dialect, a little bit more Franconian, right? Instead of Saxonian. And Thomas, I believe you're more coming from close to Saxonia, right?
You're from northern Saxonia, right? So, if I'm completely mistaken.
You're talking to me or to David?
Yes, no, I'm talking to you, Thomas.
All right. No, I come from Thuringia, the very eastern part of it, where it's sort of almost a Saxonian border.
I see.
But not quite. So I'm technically Thuringian, although if I really put my heart to it, I can have an appalling accent. So there is that.
Hence but me, for instance, it's hard for me to talk. This is Saxonian accent, at least.
I have been accused of being Saxonian for a good part of my life. And to be honest with you, Christoph, I find it hurtful.
Full disclosure, people, a quarter of myself is actually from a little village near Bitterfeld, which is northern Saxonia. So I stand by my origin.
Oh, my God.
Some people do. Some people don't, as we just heard. That's okay.
I realize I've just been racist to you. I apologize. I didn't want to imply that being Saxonian is a bad thing.
No,
and if that has come across,
it's not. It's clear. It's not. Right?
Yeah.
No, it's not. No, my maternal grandfather is actually from a place called Delitzsch.
Yeah. They make what do they make in Delitzsch? Crackers, right? Biscuits.
There's something.
I heard about Delitzsch. Actually.
Yeah, Delitzsch is actually the birthplace of something called the Raiffeisen movement, as in cooperative banking.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I didn't know that.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm proud to be quarter Saxonian. Yes.
Yeah, that's fine. But you know, at the end, right? You can have assholes in Bavaria.
As we have clearly discussed,
that's all fine, right?
We are all German to some extent or another, anyway. So yes. Maybe not.
It actually doesn't matter too much, right? I mean, as you might know, or Christoph, at least I have the feeling, right? Talking about it, I have the feeling that it's actually, for me as a German, hard to have a German identity. Or maybe this isn't just me, and given the fact that we see some race of right-wing people in Germany as well, politically seen, this doesn't seem to be the case for everyone, right? But let's say it's a bit, I'm not sure, right? I never saw myself as, yeah, you are this German person or whatever. Indeed, there is some cultural context, but I'm feeling the same time quite at home when I'm sitting in London in a pub, right? I don't have the feeling that there is a kind of cultural break for me, right?
The
UK is not even part of Europe anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, it's for me, or even if I'm in the US, right? Or then it's not totally different. Let's say indeed there is stuff which is totally different, but it's not the case that I'm always thinking about myself as being totally German and having specific values totally associated with it. But it's maybe just me, right?
No, it's not just you. I feel the same, and I think it is because the state that we grew up in doesn't exist anymore. So in many ways, we are nomads of history. You know, we don't really have a state that we deeply belong to, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
How are you Russian for both of you?
You must have learned it at school, right?
Oh god, yeah. So I started Russian at year 5, and I had to end it at year 7. Oh no, at year 12. So 7 years. 7 years of Russian.
Really? Yeah. I never learned Russian. I had Latin. Oh. At English, Latin, and French.
I didn't know these were options.
Really? Actually, no, the problem is I was too young, right? I'm younger than you, Thomas. And for me, basically, I never got into this Russian language stuff at school because I'm younger, right? That's just
okay.
The generation before you was mandatory, you know? Isn't that right?
Yeah, sure.
It was mandatory for me. Oh, yeah, big time.
I thought David was older than 40.
No, I'm exactly 40. Let's see.
I know we're getting somewhere. Okay.
It's your birthday. Congratulations.
Nah, maybe not. I mean, I'm older than 40, but I'm basically 40 years old if you ask me. Right?
I see.
I can't tell you which day it is exactly, right? 40 years and whatever amount of days, right?
I'm 40.
Less than 41. Less than 41.
Yes, I'm still 26, exactly. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Of course you are.
Okay. Martin, you had Russian at school, right? In the Netherlands.
No, we weren't part of the empire.
Then, I know.
Part of the empire.
That was elective, of course. That wasn't mandatory. No, Martin apparently, I mean, Martin's Russian is quite existent, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Come on, Martin. Come on.
Give it a go, Martin.
Hit us.
Many years ago.
No, because we did recently actually an episode, as you may or may not know, on the first year of the 5-year plan. And of course, the little bit of fun was actually that we do the intro in Russian.
Oh, right. I have to listen to that.
Obviously, too, yes.
I must have missed
it. Somewhat on that one.
Okay.
Just a bit of fun, yes.
Indeed.
Okay, time to wrap this up, guys.
Question, why? Right.
Because Russia is known, or Russia used to be known for their 5-year plans. Simple.
Okay.
Yeah, so we had 5-year plans in East Germany as well, if I remember correctly.
There you go.
Yeah.
Didn't work out that well, right? Didn't work out that well, right?
So. Oh, yeah, well.
Well, there are always second attempts, right? So let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Guys, time to wrap this up. Any passing, any final remarks from the Gunplay Old Quarters?
Mm. I mean, are we nearly done, or is, or I'm not sure. Is it just half an hour or whatever?
No. Basically, no. This will not be edited much. So we're clocking in at about almost an hour. Yeah, as I said, we do not do 2 hour episodes. So we try to keep.
I was about to say, yeah, your time.
Yeah, it's nearly an hour, right? Time was actually flying.
Yes, indeed.
It was quite fun, actually.
Yeah, same here. So we're looking forward to the what I'm looking for? Not mutual invite, but rather to we're looking forward to being over to your podcast.
Yeah. Sure. Quite soon, and then as soon as I find time, I will also publish this after we had our session. Yeah, no. From our side, I don't know, right, what to say. Hope you liked listening to us four, right?
Absolutely.
I hope it was a bit of fun. I thank you very much for the invite, Martin and Christoph.
Anytime.
Really liked it, and so. Stick with Linux and Laws, and maybe also explore the Grumpy Old Quarters podcast.
Yeah. Available on SoundCloud and other fine proprietary platforms.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, if they mention this, right, we are not on this or Hacker or
Public Radio.
Public Radio, sorry, right.
This doesn't disqualify us.
But yeah, we are basically on SoundCloud and our Spotify and Apple Podcasts, right?
The Apple thing as well.
Pick your proprietary platform, and chances are the Grumpy Old Quarters on it.
My sentence about this, I'm not sure if you guys are you only publishing it via this or Hacker Public Radio?
Yes.
Then in order to reach more people, it's not the better idea to use more platforms, right? And let's say Spotify and Apple, they are giving this to you for free in a sense, right? Because they kind of want to enrich the amount of podcasts they are offering, which means the only thing you need is an RSS feed, right? And then they are able to pick it up and you can stream it from there, right?
Well, this is the reason why you will find us on Google Podcasts, yes.
You see, right?
Okay. That's exactly because the RSS feed is reflecting the HPR stuff, yes.
Yeah. And you could provide this RSS feed also to Spotify, right? For instance, I have Spotify on my mobile phone, and maybe everyone has, right? And I don't know a single person who has,
thank you very much.
I have one more question before you go, guys. Do you know your listener statistics at all?
Well, there's at least two confirmed listeners, right? Sorry, one and a half, because Martin doesn't listen to all the episodes, I think. So that's at least me. If not more.
I don't actually know the number of listeners.
Right.
I'm not sure. Maybe I have a look into
it's
that.
It's not totally, it's not thousands of listeners or whatever, right?
Okay.
But we have a bunch of plays. It's not too bad, I would say, for what we are doing, right? I kind of find it okay, right?
Okay. It's less than a million.
Less than a million, yeah. And how much listeners are you having? Is actually this Hacker or Public Radio allowing you to track the number of listeners?
We got about quadruple numbers, but I don't think the stats are okay. So I reckon it clocks in at a couple of hundred listeners, but I might be off.
Yeah. Maybe a bit more than we have. I don't know, right?
I think
last time when I checked, we had 200 listens.
Okay.
Like this, right? So across all the episodes.
That's good to know that my bot actually works.
Yeah.
Very good. Excellent. And with these
the next time if you write a bot, right, it could be a bit more aggressive, let's say, right?
Yeah.
Pull requests are being accepted, David. Okay, guys. It was really fun having you over. And with that remark, we would like to thank you for being here and looking forward to having you over at some stage back again.
This is the Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness. Thank you for listening. This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, type attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for their song Salute Margaret, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under CC at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts. I clearly heard the echo now. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, we are...
I wonder if recording is on.
It is, actually, Thomas. It is.
I have no idea.
This message configurable, man?
No, it's not.
Oh, man.
Recording is on.
David, the software is written in Java. What do you expect?
I like Java, by the way.
Fair enough, yes, we know.
Is that the first topic, then?
Okay.
By the way, Java is just a language, right? You can actually compile Java to a native binary if you want.
Absolutely not, David. Absolutely. Okay, this is Linux In-Laws, Season 1, Episode 24. I think, no, what is it, 25? Doesn't matter anyway. We're going to cut this out anyway. And rolling.
And maybe the next time when you are visiting us, Martin is able to talk or say something.
He's a little bit shy, but that's okay.
That's a bit of a novel idea for a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's the format.
The silent guy, right? Okay, cool.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.